We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games.
This is Season 1, Episode 52, movie, The Tomorrow War for July 10th, 2021.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
This means a lot to us. We hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen to as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family.
But before we continue with the show, here are our sponsors and collaborators.
This podcast is a proud member of the Let's Chat Club. Find out how you can become a member by going to the website letschatpodcast.net.
Otto? Where are we?
It appears that we have landed on another podcast.
Oh, well, this is UHS William Mackey, letting you know that we are sentient spaceships, getting in all sorts of silly adventures...
while dealing with a formidable enemy.
True. And, oh, there's also this science ship.
Hey.
She's investigating why all of the organic species suddenly died off, leaving the galaxy to...
spaceships! Out wherever you get your podcasts on your planet.
So, this movie, we had to do it. It just released on July 2nd, 2021, as an Amazon original movie called The Tomorrow War. And it was amazing.
Yeah, it was a very good movie.
It was totally amazing.
Way better than the title.
Who recommended this one?
Well, it was a combination between your friend Kristen... mm-hmm. And Charlie wanted to see it too.
Yeah, for all of you, Charlie is actually my brother. This movie, the director is Chris McKay. The movie cost $20 million to make. Now, there's an interesting fact that I learned about that price. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you knew this, but I found it to be really interesting. The film was made by Paramount Pictures.
Oh.
And it was supposed to have, you know, a release to theaters, you know. What happened is, what we all know, COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not know Paramount sold the film to Amazon for $200 million.
Damn.
That's interesting. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that there's movies, you know, sci-fi movies out there that we have seen, they're like $400 million. But I don't know. I just found that really interesting that they sold, they chose not to release it and just take a hit. You know, it makes me wonder because that's listed as the cost of the film,
mm-hmm.
obviously, because... Amazon released it, so that's how much it cost them. Obviously, there's no box office because it's, you know, a streaming service. So it makes me wonder how much did it actually cost to make.
This has been breaking our heads since we started with Netflix streaming services movies, and I think that I have come to an understanding that probably all these systems have metrics
mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
keep track of how many times something is played.
Yeah,
even though there's not a box office... they measure how much that movie is played per each membership, you know?
Yes.
And then they calculate more memberships that come brand new that also play that one too. That's how I think that they measure it. So it's kind of a ornamental mathematics around it. But I think that it doesn't make any much difference because if not, they wouldn't be making these movies back to back because they're very good movies, you know? They're like top quality movies and they're just like they're in the streaming services.
Yeah.
Instead of going to the movies.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, now it's common knowledge, you know, any of the streaming services are just as good as studios. But I remember when streaming services started, I had Netflix when Netflix was a DVD rental service.
Oh.
Where they send you the DVD through the mail, kind of like what, you know, that gaming service that we had.
Gamefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now they're this huge, you know, basically studio, and movies that any of those streaming services, like, you know, Amazon and Netflix and all those, they are to par with what traditionally was known as, you know, Hollywood studios or, you know, any, you know, the big streaming, I mean, the big, you know, traditional studios out there. It's kind of crazy. The movie is 2 hours and 14 minutes. And it's short. It basically shows you this family man that gets drafted to fight in a war that is going to happen 30 years in the future. One thing that I found interesting about the movie, I don't know if you noticed this, but when the movie starts, we notice that it was set next year.
Yeah, 2022.
Yeah. And I think that is slightly clever way to get you in the sense, get you the viewer into the sense of, you know, you are about or you are watching something from the future.
Yeah. Kind of blends with the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've spotted this several times on the movies that we watch.
Yeah.
It's very subtle yet tricky.
I like that subtleness. It's like you don't really quite, I mean, you kind of notice, but it gets you, it's the perfect setting. It sets you. And you know, I think it was clever from the director or writers to be able to do it or start it that way.
So, I mean, doing preppers, get ready for next year, and you got to be seeing people that are going to be giving everything away. Take advantage of that so you can pick whatever you like the most when they're giving it away. And you'll see, next year is going to be a bomb.
Yeah. Talk about how 2020 was, you know?
Oh, my God. Now, so basically, the fucked up part of him being drafted is that they're doing an invasive process on his arm, putting a tracking device that is watching him constantly.
Yes.
It's a pulse tracking device. That's how invasive it is.
Apparently, it's slightly painful.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally just reading his pulse constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, like they're inside of him.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, I'm assuming this device, it's definitely attached to his DNA. So, and for all of you who have not watched the movie, this device, it actually gets you in sync to be able to transfer you back and forth between 2022 and 30 years into
the future. Based on the hypothesis that they provided for time traveling in this movie, you can send one person only once back and forth. That's why they're doing this. Oh, No. Not once. Right. You're right.
No. I think I know where you're going with this. The thing is, it kind of reminds me, and I don't know if you guys have, if you guys remember one of our previous episodes about the movie Deja Vu. If you have not watched that episode from, go ahead and.
Oh my God, that movie's great.
Scroll down and listen to that episode. But the technology that they were using for traveling, for time traveling in Deja Vu is similar to the technology that they're using in this movie.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, if you're not familiar with time travel, basically what it is, the two times are moving forward in time. And it goes right into a theory that I was actually listening to, where we are always traveling into the future. So in theory, traveling into the future is what's going to help you go back into the past by warping, you know, the space-time in front of you. So you technically are going into the future. So what happens in deja vu is that both timelines are going into the future at the same time. So if you travel, you know, you can't travel, because so one of the guys actually said it. It's like, why don't you travel to before the war started and ended? It's like, it doesn't really work that way.
The simple solutions, they're always there.
you can't travel. You can't really go prior to the time. So it's all in parallel.
You can go prior to the time, and then you can just pull a curtain to make it another parallel universe, and then you don't have to worry about it.
And then what you were talking about, I know exactly what you're talking about, is the fact that that machine is, for some reason, they're able to turn it on, was it once a week?
Yes, once a week. It was 147 hours.
They 147. Had. So every 147 hours, they can turn the machine, and that's when you can
jump back.
You know, you can have people go to the future
if you're alive,
and if you're alive, the people in the future can go back to the past. So that's what you're talking about. Is that there's only one window?
Yes.
To go back and forward, which I found a very clever.
I found it clever because it creates a constraint for the whole situation. Like, oh no, you cannot just leave whenever you want, you know?
Exactly.
But at the same time, I find it ridiculous because once we harness some kind of technology, we like to know how to harness it at will. There we are kind of at mercy of it.
It gives you a sense that, you know, we are obviously advanced technologically.
But we're tinkering with technology that we do not know much of.
Out of necessity.
Yeah.
The
just humanity, like quantum mechanics, you know, like we don't know much of it.
Yes.
We just in the doorsteps of a whole new world that is going to probably change so many perceptions about so many things in science.
And once we understand quantum mechanics, I'm sure, you know, our questions will change.
Oh, yes.
We have the questions that we have nowadays based on our current knowledge. But once our knowledge increases, those questions will change. And in most cases, we will realize we were not asking the right questions. You know, and that's the main thing when it comes to stuff like this, is to be able to ask the right questions. And most likely, we don't know any better to ask. And that leads us to you know, what we're talking about, how we're dealing with this time travel technology, but it is obvious that we're doing it out of necessity.
Yes.
So it doesn't have all the kinks out, and I'm sure there's a lot of things out there that are not, you know, discovered yet because of the, you know, the 140-hour thing and all the other stuff, where if you had enough time, you could probably create a technology that would, you know, you could travel at will.
Yeah,
but
that would be the ideal.
It's obvious by watching this that, you know, humanity's losing. Almost the entire world is dominated by these alien, and there's barely any humans left. And that's all they had. That's their last resort.
Apocalypse.
Yes.
Literally.
So.
And I mean, those freaking monsters are bizarre, man.
Oh yeah.
Like, I hope I never had to fight some shit like that in a video game.
White spikes. The white spikes.
White fangs.
It's white spikes. And I think they call it white spikes because, you know, from their tail, and I'm assuming this. I mean, it wasn't very
but
clear.
But I thought they were calling the spikes fangs.
Well, it's I don't know.
Who knows, man?
I'm just looking at the actual name.
Then again, we also have the beautiful translations from Netflix where they put something on the subtitles and something on the cartoon talking.
My assumption is the white spike is because these creatures, they have these tails, and they shoot what appears to be like spikes from them, and they're actually white.
Yeah,
these things can go through metal. And what these creatures do is, if they get you, you're basically food, and that's the reason why
humanity, they'll eat you like sashimi on a sushi bar.
And that's why humanity is,
you know. But here's the more fucked up part of it. Mm-hmm. You only can kill it by shooting it at the neck or the belly if it's uncovered.
Yes.
Because, yes. I mean, they shoot bullets at that shit like there's no tomorrow.
Yes.
And it's just scary to see how many bullets that thing can take and doesn't die.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, my God. When I saw that at the first part of the movie, I was like, oh, no, these guys are freaking dying.
And I mean, we're talking about machine guns and a whole group of
like soldiers. Whole magazines on one single monster, and he keeps on charging at you. That's not funny, bro. That's very fucked up.
Yeah. So to go back a little bit, the reason why his name was Dan Forrester, and you know, you probably know who he is. He was in Marvel. He is Chris Pratt, and he's playing Dan Forrester. Now, apparently, one of the reasons, and I'll get to the second reason later on, but he was, based on his records on this movie, Dan Forrester was born in November 11, 1982. And he was supposed to die in October 13, 2030.
So he defied death.
So I guess part of the reason, and here's another question that I'm going to ask you, and see what, I think I know what your answer is going to be, because we kind of think the same way when it comes to this. The reason why you get selected or you get drafted for this war is very apparent initially when they start explaining it, because they're trying not to mess with the timeline.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're trying to get people that will be dead
by the time that they make it to the future.
When the war starts.
Mm. Oh.
When the world starts.
I thought that the main component of picking the person is that they were going to be dead the time that they were going to be dropped in.
No, no, no.
So they create a continuum.
Because they don't know that. They don't know they're going to be dead. You know, remember, when we started the movie, there had been a lot of jumps already.
And when they are putting the machine on our character, Chris, and they tell him, we found a record of desertification.
Exactly. October 13, 2020, 2030.
So he was told the day that he was dying.
He was going to die.
He was not told how.
And that's the reason why they draft him. Because the war starts in 2030. So he's going to be dead by the time the war starts. So they figure that would play into the continuity. And everybody there, like when he asked around, the other guy said he was going to die. I forgot what year he was going to die. It was a lot sooner, though. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 8 years from 2022. And
yeah, he had terminal cancer. And he's a badass, of course.
Yeah, because you know he has nothing to lose. He's mm-hmm. going to die anyway, so he did say, I'm going to die the way I want to die.
Yeah.
You know, so he became this badass. So here's the question. I mean, they have the right idea. You know, they don't want to mess with the timeline. And that's the reason why they're selecting or drafting people that have died prior to the start of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my issue, and I don't know what you think about this. Cause and effect.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
Elaborate.
So, in the case of Dan, for example, he's supposed to die in 2030.
Yeah.
They pulled him on 2022. So they pulled him prior to his death.
Yeah.
You know? I think I would take this a little better if they pulled him right before he dies. Because here's the problem. From 2022 to 2030.
Oh, 8 years.
8 years of interacting with people. Remember when I, and we talked about this in previous shows, you are the results of your surroundings and your experiences.
All right.
So you're taking Dan from the equation. So now he's no longer going to interact with his family, his friends. And that interaction has a cause and effect in the future, kind of like the butterfly effect. Any little thing, any tiny little thing has a major repercussion in the future.
Absolutely.
So in essence, by doing this,
he changed the whole reality.
You're changing
right there.
Yeah. So I was like, I wanted to ask you, obviously during the movie, I wanted to keep quiet, but this is one of those things that I was like, you know what? I take it. I'll take how the movie's saying, because I understand where they're coming from, but I don't know. What do you think?
To be honest with you, like I totally agree with you on that part. Like, I felt like the introductions and everything were more kind of implied, mm-hmm. and they could have done much more emphasis on them. It felt like they're so desperate because the war's going to end. They're just sending everybody to die.
Yeah.
And then the missions, when you look at what they're up against that they need to do, it's just like inhuman.
Well, let me tell you something you did not know that I just learned.
What?
It was not in the movie. And I can see now that I know and I see the movie again, it does make sense to me. But you remember when all the draft people were in the room and they're getting the guns and all this stuff, and someone asked, okay, where's the training? And they said, we don't need no training. Did you find that interesting or odd?
I found it interesting. I didn't find it odd.
Here's what I discovered. And they don't show this in the movie, but it makes sense that it's in the movie. It's just not spoken. The soldiers were secretly poisoned. Not to die, but to kill the aliens when they get eaten.
Oh, wow.
So they're meant to be disposable.
Weightlifting.
They're meant to be disposable.
Oh, my God.
But as they die,
that's bizarre, man.
They accomplish their mission.
Yeah, but that's bizarre, man. That's like kamikaze, little bums.
Exactly.
Oh,
and,
my
and you know,
God.
That is, if you examine history and war, you see many examples. One of the earliest examples of this is what you said, the kamikaze. The
Second World War, they used to mm-hmm. use trained dogs.
Exactly. I found that to be so interesting. I mean, it's not spoken in the movie, but it explains a lot of like what they do and how they do it. Like, especially that when they say, well, we don't need no training. I'm mm-hmm. like, really? You're going to go into the unknown? And then they ask, okay, what are we fighting? It's like, well, we figure that if we show you what you're fighting, you are going to not want to go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I found that really interesting.
It is actually hilarious. And to be honest, like, I have my wondering about that part, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, me too. When I was... it's when I started reading about it that I'm like, but I was like, you know, you're going into the future, unknown.
And they don't want to tell them anything. Practically, nothing. The least you know, the better is what they tell them. It's like, what the heck, man? Like, he doesn't even know what the fuck is going to come from behind the wall.
So in essence, you're right. You know, without letting them know.
This butchery.
They're sending them to their death. On purpose, so they can kind of remember, humanity is desperate. They're losing the war. So whoever thought that idea, I think it was clever, where they picked people that were going to die anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it tried to bring that greatest skeleton of all stories, you know, a community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter your background. What it matters is your desire to actually cooperate with everybody and be part of the community and make it better, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the filter behind all that, really.
So, I mean, this movie, and it just came out. So if you guys haven't watched it, I mean, you should definitely watch it and reach out and let us know what you think, because it's a different take.
Oh, it is. And I mean, there's a lot more to the movie that it just gets more and more twisted. That's the funny thing.
Now, the other reason that I think Dan gets drafted, he is a scientist.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you might think, okay, you know, there's a couple of scientists, especially they have a whole division. I think it was called
RH.
R for research and development.
Okay.
There's full of scientists.
Yeah.
And basically what they're trying to do is trying to discover a way to kill them faster.
Mm-hmm.
So they can win the war.
So they want to, what they want to do, they want to capture a female because they have discovered different anatomy, right?
Yeah. Apparently the female, obviously the female is the one creating all this, reproducing, but they discovered that, you know, although they could kill as hard as it is to kill them, they could easily kill. I say easily, but it's not as easy as you think.
I should see you kill something first.
But you could easily kill in comparison, you know, the males in comparison to killing the female. And I noticed something. It seems like this is like the kind of like a bee colony, because I noticed there's only one female.
Yeah, that is true. Actually, they didn't show another female in the whole.
I don't know. I don't know if there's another one, but throughout the whole thing, it was just that one female, which is kind of like the bee colony type thing where you have all the workers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like the ants, you know?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
There's one single queen for all of them. And the funny thing is that she is way more aggressive and intelligent.
Mm-hmm. So, the idea was, if they can capture Tall Order there, because apparently she's the only queen, and all the males will die to protect her.
Yes.
So, if they can capture her, and they can analyze her molecular structure and biological mass, the idea is they can hopefully create
something, yeah.
They could create something that would kill her. And mm-hmm. if they can kill the queen, it would be a lot easier to kill
all of the others.
All of the other ones.
He's stopping the continued supply of more little monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
Just by getting rid of her.
So the idea is to capture her.
Now, do you imagine that all of them are actually Aphrodite and they're just not becoming female?
That's what I don't know, man. It's just, you know, I wish there was a lot more to it. I couldn't find
it. At least details sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel the same way.
So the idea is if they can do that, then they could create this liquid where I'm not sure if they can put it in the air or put it in bullets or whatever. So they can kind of like
transport it securely.
Well, the idea is trying to do a mass destruction device.
Yeah.
Where they can, you know, just destroy as many as them as possible.
With the earth.
Exactly. So apparently, and this is one of the shocking parts in this movie, is when Dan gets to the research facility, we discover that the person running the place, basically running the whole operation for humanity, only for lack of people,
mm-hmm.
It was his daughter.
Yes.
And that was a shocker to me.
And she's a badass actress.
Yeah, if you guys have, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Chuck. Yvonne, she's a great actress, and I want to see a lot more movies.
She is. She's fantastic, man.
So she's playing Muri, which is Dan's daughter. And I'm not sure. I want to see what you think. I mean, she's a scientist also, aside from being a soldier, a force soldier, apparently. I mean, humanity's on its way out, so anybody will have to take the multiple hats, just like she said.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think would is actually the reason why it seems like she called her dad over to the future? He's a scientist. She's a scientist. It seems like she did it deliberately.
Yes.
But I can't.
She did it. And I think it was more of a family bond calling than any other kind of decision making being used for her when she did that.
Because I couldn't really pinpoint if there was an actual reason, like, towards the war. Mm-hmm. However, it felt to me like humanity was going to die, and he died. She remembers him dying. So I could be completely wrong here. What I got from that is that she kind of wanted to see her dad before she died.
Yeah.
Before humanity dies.
She wanted dad, but I think that there was a lot of understanding because she does so much shit at once.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's the CEO of like three different high up end governmental departments.
Mm-hmm.
So like anybody would have lost their heads in the first 2 hours. I would say that she's also trying to distract a lot of feelings that she had from the past by keeping herself busy. So that's how she's channeling all these frustrations, and being able to see her father too is going to be the only one chance that she's going to have to get that closure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because think about it. And it's what she said. She literally said it clearly, and it makes total sense to me. I think that it was a simple answer, yet it was very concrete. She said, who would I trust more than my own father, who was the reason that I became what I am today?
And she needed someone to trust.
Yeah.
Because what she needed to do was very, very important. Later, I guess, I don't know exactly at what point Muri realized that her outcome would be completely different. But I think her dad, Dan, pulled it out of her. And we later discovered that the plan is now to give him the antidote so they can mass produce it in the past. So by the time the war starts,
yeah,
they can just maybe release it into the atmosphere and kill all of them.
That's what I was thinking.
And now it became kind of like a rescue mission because Muri wanted to sacrifice herself.
And think about it. The reality of the moment when it was time for him to go is that I don't think that there was nothing they could have done.
Yeah. Now,
I would have thought from the beginning, yeah, no, everybody has to be saved. But when you look at the situation,
yeah,
it's like that was not planned out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the humanity's hunkered down in the middle of the ocean, basically, and time is running out.
Yep.
Now, I know you don't have kids, and I don't know if you can put yourself in the shoes of a father, but I felt it.
Me too.
As a father
of two girls, I felt divided, bro.
I was like, no, I'm taking her to the past with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do whatever I can. And I felt that. It's like, especially for him, mm-hmm. Okay? He just left 2022. I can't remember what year he's obviously not in 2030. He's a lot later than that because the war is about to end. You know, the war started in 2030. So the last time he saw his daughter, she was a little cute little girl.
Yep.
And now he sees this grown woman.
That is the boss of everybody.
Yeah.
And so she's also a very, very figure of respect in the hierarchy that is surrounding him.
Basically, she's the ruler of the world.
Yeah, that's what she is.
Because like anybody goes allowed.
To her.
Yeah. So I felt for him. He's definitely in a bad situation, because you know what you need to do, because you gotta save humanity.
And you had to compose yourself, because in that moment it's not your daughter.
Yeah, but I kind of felt him.
He wanted
to save humanity, and he's definitely saving his daughter, no matter what the hell happens. And well, it didn't pan out like he wanted to.
No, it did not. But at the same time, I think that's the beauty of life. We want to make it what we think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the greatness of having the power to adapt to whatever comes in the wave. Because unfortunately, it's like I was telling a friend of mine that she put something about hope. And I told her, hope is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have hope. But you should not depend on hope. Hope is an imaginary power that is not going to resolve your problems.
It helps you towards the right path.
It helps you to visualize the result, mm-hmm. but you have to get up there and go and create that reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like if you sit there and wait for hope to make it happen, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And then I tell her, you also have to practice detachment. You should completely eliminate all the expectations. Because once you have no expectations, you have a goal, you have a direction, but it's not going to affect you on a way so negative that it's going to be detrimental to you.
Yeah.
And then she told me, no, because if you are putting that effort that you tell me to do something and it doesn't work, and I was like, exactly, nothing happens because I have no expectations.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's something that you can see that we don't play it out even to the day of today. It's something very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it wrecked him completely. When he went back in the jump later on, I mean, I felt that.
Yeah.
I really felt that. Like I felt like I lost a daughter that I didn't have.
Yeah.
When I saw him see his little girl again.
Yeah. And it was...
It's against nature.
It was hard.
It's against nature, you know. He saw his daughter dying. No parent was made to see their offsprings go away.
So basically, how it happened? He got the antidote. They only had time to make one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what actually changed the plan, because the whole idea was they had enough time to mass produce this.
Yeah,
but the aliens attacked.
And of course, for some weird reason, they had to not sedate the giant monster they have in the base.
Yeah.
It's what I'm telling you. There's a lot of decisions in the movie that I was like, yeah, they are doing it to make it more action-like, I think.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking about that, too. I mean, they were sedating the queen every hour on the hour. And all of a sudden, now that they got the antidote,
they just forgot about it. I don't know, but it didn't work out.
You know, and I was thinking in my head, like, if that was me, which that's always not the right answer.
Of course.
There's no possible way you know how you're going to act. But, you know, I would still sedate her, get enough, like at least two, right?
Hey, if I'm a toxic girl, I will tell you, maybe I do know how I would act in every.
So I would do at least two, right? Two antidotes, insert one on her and kill her,
or freeze that thing,
and then start working on the other one, assuming that you have enough time.
Yeah,
the problem is they had no time. They attacked a lot sooner, and I think it's because they already knew they had the queen. So
I think that they're portrayed like monsters, like ravaging savage animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they are not. I think that they are highly intelligent species. And unfortunately, their pattern of behavior looks barbaric to us just because we are below the chain of food. Because, I mean, I'm sure that that's how porks and beef look at us. But you know what I mean? Like, they came in a spaceship. they have strategy when they are actually going through the battlefield. Like you can see all of that.
Before you go into that, I wanted to. This actually leads me to the next question. These aliens. I don't know. I mean, they're intelligent, right?
Yes.
But I think they're not. They're intelligent as animals, not as
conscious beings.
Conscious beings.
You don't think so?
Because, and this is the reason why. If we fast forward to the end of the movie, remember they were moved like cattle, and they were in this ship that is supposed to be a alien cleaner.
Yeah.
What I gather when we saw this, yeah, you saw the alien ship that crashed. The aliens that were in charge of the ship, they look nothing like these things.
Absolutely.
And when you go to the cargo bay, they were cargo like cattle. So that's what I think. They were intelligent as animals would be intelligent, but not as sentient beings would be intelligent. And that, it explains to me why they were devouring anything in the planet, animal or human.
I still think that they might be sentient beings. We are sentient beings, right?
Well,
we are mass killing cows and chickens and porks so we can have the supermarket supply. You know, so we do that atrocity in a more sort of way, but we are wasting a bunch of other living beings' life for the sake of our food chain needs. Now, they do the same thing. Now, the reason that I'm thinking that they are sentient too is you've noticed, I don't know, in a couple of parts in the movie, when they kill something that is close to the queen, you can see that thing enraged.
Well, here's what I'm talking about. This movie is slightly similar to Alien.
Okay.
These aliens on this ship, they were referred to as planet cleaning aliens. So it seems to me like, I don't know, something happened.
Space sweepers.
Something happened. They gather all these animals, and on their way to wherever it is that they were going, they crashed on Earth. Mm-hmm. Long time
ago. Lucky us.
Yeah. And they crashed when, you know, I think when dinosaurs.
Pangea.
Yeah.
When Pangea was still on.
Exactly. So if you notice, and the engineers were trying to do that with the xenomorphs and Alien.
And that's why they were all weird out, because they were like, okay, they were supposed to have come from Russia, but we're seeing that in this nail, he has volcanic leftovers from a very, very ancient volcano in China. And they're like, what?
And that leads me to my next thing. Where they filmed this, you know, the in the original, in the take, I think was it, let me see here. It was the winter scenes,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they found the
aliens.
The aliens. In the Russian glacier.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually Iceland. Now, something that I learned is that they have never filmed there before. And prior, I want to say a few weeks before they started shooting, they found a couple of bodies.
Oh.
That seemed to be from 1940. So that was interesting.
Are they trying to identify it?
Well, I'm sure it's expeditions because, you know, in Iceland.
I want to read about that. 40s, oh, my God.
I found it really interesting. They found bodies in the same location where they were filming, like a couple of weeks prior to shooting. Wow. So to go back, I just had to say that because I found that to be really interesting.
It is.
Especially since that has never been filmed in any movie before, mm-hmm. that location in Iceland. So there's a lot of similarities, although the storyline is not the same with Alien. Because they crash in an empty planet. And that's the planet where they, you know, an alien, they went in with...
They went into the other ship.
Exactly.
And then they escape.
So in this one, this is a little more familiar with the Thing, which is also crash landed. And but in this case, scientists disturbed it. It's kind of like, you know, leave it alone.
And the little kids throwing rocks to the animals they should not in the freaking soup.
Exactly. But in this one, it's a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Because they were well preserved alone. They were never going to get out of there. And what was the reason why? Do you remember what was the reason why they got out of that ship?
Because they went to kill them?
No.
Ah, because of the melting of the ice
global ice caps. Global warming.
Yeah, absolutely.
When that melted, the aliens came out, and that's when it started.
I mean, everybody, we are on our way there. It's not a joke because it's 1 inch, one square inch per year, and it's 2021.
And look at Venus. You know, I was just talking about this.
She's getting hotter every day.
Yeah, she's hot. She's really hot.
Neil deGrasse Tyson will say right now that instead of 9 seconds, now you can do it in 7 seconds to bake a pizza.
Here's the thing, to put it in perspective. Mercury, which is right next to the sun, is 800 Fahrenheit. Venus is 900.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, it's hot, right?
And but that bitch is stubborn too because it doesn't melt.
Yeah. And the atmospheric pressure will squash you. It would be like you going without a suit to the bottom of the ocean.
I just got goosebumps when you said that.
But you know, that is the CO2 in the atmosphere.
Yep.
So it's kind of crazy because Venus is about the same size as Earth. If you manage to get all the CO2 from that planet, it would be close to Earth. Atmosphere and all.
Yeah.
It might be a little hot, but no, it would be livable.
I think that we need to really also move it a little bit further from the livable area because I think it's way too close. I saw this on an episode of How the Universe Works with Neil deGrasse.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's not by much, but Venus would not be livable unless it moves a little bit further. Besides that, absolutely.
To bring my point, CO increases the atmospheric pressure, and it also increases, it's kind of like a greenhouse. So whatever heat comes in from the sun, it stays in, and it multiplies because of the CO2. So this is what we're doing to our planet.
Yep.
And it's kind of scary. You know what I mean?
Gas it up.
So because of this, in this movie in particular, the ice melted, the aliens came out, and the war started. And basically, I don't think you can even call it a war.
No.
These things started coming out and eating people.
Mm-hmm. This is just us defending us as a species.
And in months, they took off entire cities, entire
the whole world population country. Was decimated to 500,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Like nothing. I cannot imagine a world like that.
So it's basically us defending ourselves and trying to come up with ideas on how to stay alive.
Yeah.
How to win the war.
And I mean, honestly, when you see how these things eat and hunt, it's not that you can do much to really save yourself.
So...
I mean, those things hack a freaking Homer and movement. One of them.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, no, forget it. Yeah. Just eat me.
So to go back slightly, to go back in the movies, when they came back, because a few of them came back to the past, 2022. He brought the formula that would kill them. And it was kind of clever because there was this little kid in his class that all he knows is volcanoes. And he was always being shunned.
Oh, my God.
He was always being...
That was the best.
He was always being bullied. He was always being shunned away. And they had a question now because of what you just said about, you know, volcanic ash and the nails of these things.
Yes. And when they call him in the movie and they just show his face, I was like, oh, this is so great. Karma.
Karma.
And then he's working it out like he's the boss. I'm like, holy shit. Okay.
And it's kind of crazy that a nerd saved the day. That's basically it. Because he was a nerd about, you know, you could be a nerd about anything. You know? He was a nerd about volcanoes. He knew volcanoes.
He was the man to save the day.
Well, that brings me to the next question. It's like, you know, I was thinking, you know, what happened to the scientists? You know, what happened to the experts in volcanoes? Because at that time, you know, we have them now. But if you remember, no one believed them.
No.
They even went to the government to try to get, you know, after they discovered that it was supposed to be in Russia, one of the mountains in Russia, they put politics in front of it, saying that, you know, that we'd have to talk to the countries, and you know how we're not well, you know, received in Russia and blah, blah, blah. Yep. So no, I'm not going to send you there.
They try to control it.
And so they had no other recourse but to actually go to the biggest nerd they could find, and they actually found the answer. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, you're talking about humanity's extinction.
Yep.
And the governments know this because future soldiers landed and they're drafting people for that same reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a problem with them not trying to, like, at least make an effort, because it seemed like they were dismissing them. And they're coming back from the future. They know what's going on. They know that humanity is going to die. Why did they make the... I don't know. I had a problem with that.
But, and I mean, you know that when they did the jump initially, there were problems. Because it was a total massacre. Like, people was falling from the sky all over the different places.
Oh, yeah. That's because they something got destroyed.
But what I feel is the body language and the common language when mm-hmm. it comes to the hierarchy of power in the military
mm-hmm.
is that there is no second guessing or questioning. If the boss said that's not is a no-go, even if everybody thinks it's going to be a great idea, they don't even question anymore.
Yeah.
You just let it down and they just they comply, you know, whatever is asked of them.
So that brings us to they're going to Russia. They found the alien ship. So they're in 2022, long before the war starts.
Yeah.
They go into the ship. And I don't know exactly what happened, but it melt. I can't remember.
There was like a big, big giant explosion that the girl that is in their crew detonated.
No, but that was trying to save themselves from the aliens. They had to do that in hopes that they could destroy them, and they were successful. They destroyed and
I thought, you know, they blast something before they actually go into the ship.
I can't remember. Oh, to be honest with you, I can't remember exactly what happened. All I know is that they were successful on destroying every alien in there.
Yeah.
In that ship. However,
the queen,
yes,
our lovely lady, escaped.
So I was like, okay, great.
Because they did 12 caskets of that freaking vaccine, but not a single bullet with something of it.
Yeah. Oh, I remember what happened. They were injecting them. And all of a sudden, I don't know if they kind of woke up.
When they put the first dosage and the first four or five start dying, the other ones start waking up mm-hmm. all at once. And then it was unrealistic then. They weren't going to make it.
And it makes sense that they're linked. But
what I'm saying, like, I don't think that their bullets had any kind of element that will debilitate them neither.
No,
which they could have employed. You know.
Well, but you know,
so going, make the munitions stronger.
Going back to the to my questioning about the government, you know, if they would have say yes, that you know, I'm sure they would have probably developed a bullets with the element inside,
it be, yeah.
Master Pro, you know, but they had no help. So they were kind of.
Yeah, they're doing this underground.
So you know? It would have been great, you know. However, I was like, when the Queen escaped, I was like, great, they're going to start a war early. So there goes timeline.
Yep.
There goes the timeline. A lot of people are going to die sooner now because of this thing.
And that's the funny thing. Like, they are from the past in the future trying to change the future. And supposedly it's never going to happen. But the reality is we don't know.
Yeah.
Because of that you and I always stay stuck in when we're talking about different types of realities. We don't know if in all the alternate world is just branching out and that reality always stayed. So his daughter really died and he's going to grow up.
I strongly believe in that. I strongly believe that the time forks. And if you look at a movie that explains it really well, that will be Back to the Future. So every decision you make, it forks and create a universe.
Yeah.
And that's why we have infinite universe, the multiverse theory. So I'm sure there's a universe where the war starts in, you know, after 2030. But now they're creating a universe where the war starts sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all those. So his daughter still dies.
Yeah.
And everybody else that was sent that died in the future still died.
Practically.
Exactly.
I mean, they had a whole field full of them. But later on, there weren't even five of them.
Yeah. So now they're going after. And I don't know if you know, but J.K. Simmons, it's kind of funny. Every time I see him, the first thing that comes to my head is, we are farmers.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, he's the most self-redemptive, I have to do with my son, father I ever seen in the movie. Like, he's trying to make it up to the son finally.
Yeah.
When he goes and asks for help.
He is, I think he's 66 years old.
Yeah. But he's ripped off, like what the fuck?
Did you know he shot Chris Pratt when he came onto scene? As a matter of fact,
He shocked
him because he never expected a 66-year-old man.
Oh, dude, so he looks badass.
He was ripped.
Bro.
And if you follow his social media, you would know, I think his trainer was Aaron Williamson. He posted some pictures in 2016 when he was training him for this movie. And, man, I mean, if you follow him, you're familiar with this. But he was ripped. And that's like...
And I've seen that program for Chris Hemsworth that he has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think like in a few weeks. But it's a tough thing. You have to have a lot of discipline.
Wow.
And stick to your schedule, to your meals. They ask you to do it. So it works. But I mean, it was very interesting to watch.
Chris Pratt was quoted saying, is that even possible? When he saw J.K. Simmons, I have to admit, I was shocked too.
I was shocked, but the honest truth is, he doesn't look bad on him.
No.
It looks very good on him.
Yeah. He looks badass.
It gives me like...
Especially the beer.
Like, he looks like the remember the guy from Dos Equis, the most interesting man of the world?
Oh, yes, yes.
He is like the badass, bat shit version of that guy.
Yeah. I mean, they could start making memes with J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't always let down my son, but when I do, I make it up to him.
So in this scene, they both go out. to try to find the queen. And they...
Oh, no, 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 no. We have to mention this because this is the funniest part of it.
Go ahead.
They go to the boss, like the higher guy of the American military, and he shut them down.
But that's prior to this whole thing.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
And then they go here.
It's kind of messed up.
And doing clandestine.
You imagine if they had the help. And that's my whole point. But
yeah,
they were treating them like, you know, they don't know what you're talking about. You know, we are the government. We know what's going on. You guys are just peons. Just move on and do your thing. We do our thing.
Mm-hmm. So they go rogue.
Yeah. Really. I mean, this is the reason why the J.K. Simmons, he got involved into this. Because if you watch this movie from the beginning, you know that he wants nothing to do. Because he's playing the part of James Forrester, which is his dad,
mm-hmm.
Muri's grandfather. And he has nothing to do with it because apparently he abandoned Dan when he was young. So there's this resentment. So, however, I think it was Special Forces and he flies airplanes. He needed his help. Because at this point, you know, humanity.
It's stuck.
Yeah.
It's not his pride anymore.
Yes. So forget pride. I mean, we'll talk about this later. But humanity is going to die.
Yeah, exactly. And so, his daughter with it.
Yes. So in essence, he's kind of doing this. I don't know if you get this. He saw his daughter die. So yeah, he's saving humanity. But he, in a selfish way, he's trying to save his daughter. And he mentions this a couple of times.
Yes.
He's like, if I do this, if I kill these aliens before the war starts, then nothing has had happened.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. He's saving everybody, right? But he's also saving somebody that is the world to him.
Yes. Yes.
I think that sets it up.
Yep. So that brings us back to what we're talking about. They go after the queen. And
get off with her head.
A lot of close calls.
Oh my God.
A lot of close calls. One scene, which is slightly funny, and this is what you were talking about, it's like I'm making it up to you. His father was going to sacrifice himself.
Unnecessarily.
He was going to jump with a thing. And in a way, I kind of understand, because if they both hit the rocks below, they both dead.
And that's a bed with that giant monster. I mean, you can blow a whole magazine of 45 millimeters on that and just die.
Yeah, no, but that was a tall, that was a tall mountain.
I don't know.
And you could see how it actually, you know, we saw what happened when it actually fell. And it just, what would happen?
Whoa. When it fell, it had the virus in the face.
Well, but that was
and
only...
That she kind of goes like, it makes you just like disappear.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
So the thing is, the son kind of got in the way. And it's like, no, I'm sorry, Dad. And he just shoved this thing into the monster's mouth.
I was like, die.
You have to have balls.
Yeah, man.
You have to have balls. You know what that thing does with its mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell he's just like, okay, I'm just going to die. He's just going for it. I don't care. You take my arm, you kill me, whatever. But I ain't taking you with me.
He forgot about fear.
Yeah.
You know, so he became an animal with another animal fighting for survival.
Wow.
That's the feeling that you get when he just stands up and put that thing and that thing bites on it and just kills itself.
Wow. And he kept his arm.
Yeah.
He kept his hand.
But the best part is he goes like, die, you die.
The funniest thing aside from that is when they are both on the floor, you know, the monster has died. It just squashed when it hit the bottom of the mountain. And they're both on the floor. And I think, I can't remember who said.
The father.
I gotta take a rest. It's like, yeah. It's like, you said die. Did you really say die? And he said, yeah.
No, he said that you really tell it to die.
You should have done that sooner because it actually listened to you. Oh my God, that was close.
And I think that was something tasteful about throughout the whole movie. It had good subtle comedy too, even though it was a very dire situation.
And he has my favorite thing in any movie.
Yvonne from Chuck?
Well, aside from that, it has a happy ending on steroids.
Oh, yes.
On steroids. Of course. Did I say on steroids? Did I say on steroids?
Yeah. Everybody's happy.
Not only...
No, the blonde grown-up daughter, you don't know.
Not only did he... You know,
but yeah, it's a very happy ending.
Got together with his dad and forgot the fact that he was abandoned by him.
Yeah.
It does help that he wanted...
Reconciliate the family.
Exactly. He saved his family. He saved his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He saved humanity.
Yeah.
So...
It's like he took care of all the boxes that needed to be checked up in reality. I mean, if you think about it, he meeting his grown-up daughter was not even part of... the plan at the end.
Exactly.
That was an extra he got.
Yeah.
In reality. And think about it. It's something that I thought the moment that I saw he interacting and she telling him how everything went down before he died. And I'm thinking in my head, yeah, but he's sitting with her now here. This is probably never going to happen.
Well.
Already.
You know, I kind of see how.
Could have happened.
It could have happened. Even after that conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, and I was kind of worried about that when he came back, because there's nothing worse from a father than seeing his daughter die.
Of course.
And now he's going back to the future. He's going to look in the eye of his beautiful young daughter.
Which he just saw dying.
Which he loves. And all he's going to have in his mind
is he knows is she's going to die young.
And he can't do nothing to save her.
Yeah. That's their racking.
So I was kind of worried about that because I can see how it would just happen exactly the way that she described it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But it didn't.
Exactly.
It didn't.
And you know what? It was due to communication.
Yep.
What he did? He actually, and I think he kind of listened to her grown up daughter. He sat down with a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he told her everything.
Yeah.
Communication.
That's how he got the clue of where they could actually search for the ship.
Sit down with the wife, discuss everything. And you know, people take it for granted, but communication is a powerful tool.
It is, man. I mean, if you don't ask, you never know if somebody was there ready to help you.
So I'm sure, because we don't see much of this conversation. We know that he told her everything. But I can tell that, you know, now there's two people carrying the burden. It's not just him. So that's a very different, that has to be a very different outcome.
Of course.
Because in the outcome that the daughter, the future daughter, mentioned, it seems to me like he was carrying the burden. Because he was secluded. She described him as not talking anymore to the wife. And eventually, you know, through the alcoholism, and he had a car accident and he died.
And think about it. It's the difference between an individual experience and moving towards a collective experience.
Exactly.
When you're in a collective experience, you're in communion. When you're in communion, you're connected, interconnected.
It's kind of funny. It doesn't matter how hard that the weight is, just having one more person with you to carry that weight goes a long way.
I love the saying that says, alone, you can get there faster. Together, we'll get there further. We'll get further.
Yeah.
And it's true. That's where the strength is. And I think that's like one of the simplest yet most important messages of the movie too.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, the daughter wanted to work alone with her frustrations and everything. Exactly. Too.
She didn't want to mention anything of her plan.
Yeah.
And she did say, I mean, I trust you. You're the only person that I trust in this thing. That's the reason why I brought you, you know, to the future. Yet, if you know my plan, you will not help me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of right.
Yeah, she was right.
He would not want to see her dead.
Why would he, you know? Like, that's completely abstract. But at the same time, like, she, with the logic, she understood there's no way that they can save that reality.
Yes.
It's far beyond fixing point, you know?
And that's why I kind of gather that when he went back to the past, to 2022,
mm-hmm.
it explains why he's so gung-ho into, you know, doing this. With or without the army, he doesn't care. And as a matter of fact,
because in his mind, he knows that he can prevent this from ever happening. So it's like, I can erase my daughter's death.
Mm-hmm.
I can make sure that she actually has a brilliant and peaceful future.
So now here's a question for you. The people, because remember, he went in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
He was drafted. But prior to this, a lot of people have gone and had died in the future. And, I mean, we can know this basically because, I mean, there was a...
I know where you're going.
The person...
Oh, my God.
The person that was with him, he said he's been there, I don't know how many times he's been back. So there's a lot of people that went and died in the future and never came back.
Yeah.
Now, he came back.
Will they come back?
And he changed the future. Now...
Mm-hmm. Will they come back?
How's that going to play in your mind?
Well, it's either or. They either come back, they're back in their houses, just like what happens with Jumanji. Remember?
Let me say it out. Let me say it out loud. Okay? He prevented the war that was going to start in 2030 from happening in 2022. So if the war never started, would these people ever came back to 2022 to ask for people in the first place to fight in the war in 2030.
If he actually is going to jump exactly back to the exact timeline that he came from, right? That's where all the dead people that went into the future,
when
right?
he came back, there was already a lot of dead people.
Exactly. Now, what I think is all these dead people will literally just reappear, and the reality before that, it's completely changed. Just like what happens in the movie Frequency, remember?
Yeah.
Something like that. No. That kind of alteration to the current timeline where almost everybody but the few that have that perception of continuum between different timelines can experience.
Now, let me throw a wrench into your machinery there. Now.
Oh, this is a spaghetti here.
Now, think about everything you just said.
Uh-huh.
But think about it from the multiverse perspective.
The multiverse perspective is basically, this is the way I see it. You see how I'm telling you that few of them that have the continuum of multiple parallel timelines?
Mm-hmm.
That's the multiverse. Not everybody can see it. But those few that went through back and forth have it in their mind. They still remember everything. What happened and what supposedly didn't happen, which actually happened in another timeline. I'm persistent, man.
here's how I perceive it. Assuming that he came back to his multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
In his multiverse, these people are dead.
Yeah.
And they will continue to be dead. Going forward, the people that were going to die do not die.
But why the people are dead if the war did never happen?
Because it forked. His decision, remember multiverse? Every decision you make forks the universes and create a new one. So there's a new universe now where people never died because of what he did. And there's a universe where everybody died because of what he did not do. That's just how I see it. I'm telling you. I'm not a physicist. I could be completely wrong here.
We're going to need to bring a physicist. Because I'm not going to learn that shit.
But you see what I mean? I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with what you said.
Yeah. I think that imperiously, it has to change. the past, because I mean, it's so many, so much people that die from a race that didn't even make it out of the ship. So what killed them?
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, if it never happened in his multiverse, he stopped it. I'm you know, granted, there's a lot of multiverses.
Yeah,
we still have the one where people die. We still have the one where the daughter died. But I'm talking about his multiverse. He came back to his multiverse where he stopped the war before the war started.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it just, I understand what I just said, but I'm still confused because it doesn't compute. It makes sense, but it doesn't compute.
The problem that makes it confusing for us is that there is not a definite or an absolute perception of which is the correct one. Between multiverse, parallel universe, just one single one experience and continuing experience throughout every single one of us. None of us really have that definite answer. So our answer about what we think it is just a speculation because of that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's as far as we can go, really, with what we have. Because of that. So I know that no matter what we try to come up with, it's going to. Oh, I love the guy.
We need to have him in the show to talk about this.
Well, if he comes. And I will have to warn him.
I am so sorry. I'm gonna probably butcher his name. Mikio Kaku.
Mm-hmm.
He's a theoretical physicist. And I believe he's a professor in a New York university. I can't remember what university that is.
And he also comes up a lot in the show that they have in Netflix, Cosmos.
Oh, yes, yes.
He comes a lot in there, too. I love watching him, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching a video where he was explaining multiverse. And so...
I think I watched that video on YouTube.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool. So that's, you know, going back to what we're saying. What I just said makes sense.
Yeah.
It just... I can't compute. I'm looking for the answer as to, does it make sense that those people will be dead, but they were already dead? The decision happened after their death.
That's what I'm trying to use the example of how the perception was depicted in the movie Frequency, for example.
Because
They changed something, and only the person that is making the change still align with the two realities, even he's in the reality changing in front of him and everybody absorbing the new reality. Yeah. So that's what I felt like when you talk about those people that die, that were deployed before, those people probably are going to be just reappear sitting on their houses, whatever they were supposed to be in this new reality. So it's like they're just being dumped in a new reality. It's not like it's being built up. That reality was built already before he jumped back in because of the consequences and the changes of events.
Yeah, yeah. But
it's too big of a machine for us to try to understand it with a tiny brain, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I invite all of you listeners, all of you, let's talk about this.
Oh, yeah. We could talk forever about that.
Let's talk about this. I found this so fascinating to talk about. Tell me what you think. I mean, we have a Discord channel. You guys are all invited to it. We're on Twitter. And reach out to us and let us know what you think. I mean, I'm at a loss with this topic. And it makes sense, and yet it doesn't at the same time, if that makes sense to you.
Yep, it does. It makes sense that it doesn't make sense.
But yeah. Let us know what you think about this movie. This movie is amazing. It just came out. So it's a little too late to tell you. Spoilers alert.
Oh, come on.
But if you listen to the show, you know we're all about the spoilers. So I hope that you have watched the movie prior.
And if not, just go and do it. And then come talk to us.
Yeah, yeah. So let's definitely talk about this. This is a great, great movie. And I have to thank my brother Charlie.
Yes.
And my friend Kristen for recommending this movie. It was amazing. And you too, let us know what you think about this episode. Do you agree with our thoughts? And if not, what are your thoughts?
And let's fight.
Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you like this episode.
And if you have any idea about which topics you would like us to discuss in our next episodes, please reach out.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant. And if you like this podcast, share it.
And don't forget to rate us in your favorite podcast platform. This will help us grow. Thank you.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off.